Hey, where are you going, Jim? The elevator's over here.
Taking the stairs.
But our meeting's up on 8.
Yeah, I know.
But that's 8 floors up. That's like 8 times... 8, I don't... A lot of stairs.
That's the point. I've already lost a few pounds and earned almost $100 in wellness incentives.
Whoa, you're getting rewarded for working out?
Yeah, I know. I'm just as surprised as you are, Bob.
Fearless is full of surprises. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits and sign up at fepblue.org/chooseblue by December 11th.
This edition of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. You are flying high with Locked On Eagles, presented by LockedOnEagles.com. We are your daily source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. Follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He's Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, I know the streak is intact. I'm going to ask you anyway. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, my man. It's been a good weekend. Every day is a good day to be alive. But is the NFL always like this and we just don't notice because we're locked in on the Eagles game? Because I was like, all right, relaxing weekend watching football with no stress. And then the NFL blew up.
Things went bonkers, and especially like, okay, the Saints-Lions game had zero business being whatever that was.
A 90-point game. One of the ugliest high-scoring games I've ever seen.
I said on to somebody at Twitter, I think it's one of our listeners, actually, they asked who they should start, and I said somebody from that game, play them, because that game could hit the over twice, and they nearly did. So if you had a lot of players in that game, you were making money all day. Some other things real quick, Aaron Rodgers, the big news, obviously. Aaron Rodgers goes down with a broken collarbone.
He's broken it before, right?
Yeah, this is his second
one. I'm pretty sure he's done it before, yeah.
So yeah, that's going to send a big-time ripple effects through the NFC. It's going to shake things up as far as the playoff picture goes, the divisional picture goes. I think Brett Hundley is a good quarterback.
Yeah, are you staying with Hundley?
Yeah, I think you stay with Hundley. I mean, that's the whole reason he's been there, right? Kind of like
right.
Not the heir apparent, but, you know, he's. I think they view him as a solid backup and a spot starter. And who are you really going to get in the meantime without having to give up too much value? Because, look, I don't know if Hundley is going to keep that team as a playoff team. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be good enough to win them some games. But, man, I think that team needs Aaron Rodgers being spectacular to be a solid team.
It's going to be very interesting because the last time Rodgers got injured, they had a pretty dominant offensive line, and Eddie Lacy was behind it, and this was the height of Eddie Lacy. You know, however high that peak was, it was the height of Eddie Lacy. And so they kind of had a running game on which to fall back. Now, they haven't had that so far this year, but the offensive line has been getting healthier as the year has gone on. And so you wonder what might happen there if they can revitalize the running attack. Aaron Jones, that kid out of UTEP, showed out a little bit against Dallas. I don't know how he did against Minnesota. Obviously, a much tougher defense against which to run. But you might be able to see, you know, the Packers, McCarthy gets a lot of flack, but they've got, you know, he's a good head coach, and he'll be able to work around the limitations with Hundley there, I think. But, you know, looking for an Eagles NFC kind of playoff perspective, that injury to Rodgers is huge.
Yeah, and then you look at the division as well. The Washington Redskins go up 17-0 on the 49ers and then eke out a win with C.J. Beathard coming in for Brian Hoyer, who got benched, putting up 17 unanswered points and making it a game. You look around the NFC, man, there isn't a whole lot there. And what we're gonna do today, we are going to kind of take a look at the league right now, give some power rankings, and just to see, because we haven't talked about this before, we said, let's just throw it out there, off the cuff kind of thing. And see where maybe the Eagles fall in line and see where some other teams are. Because, I mean, you had another team go down too, the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, that was absurd. Atlanta can't hold on to a lead for nothing, man. Yeah. The Dolphins came in with the 31st best rushing offense and the 32nd best passing offense. And they beat the Super Bowl losers, should have been Super Bowl winners, who had a 17-point lead. What's the NFL? What is this?
I don't know, man. But even with that Chiefs game, the end was bonkers with that Antonio Brown deflection touchdown.
Oh, my goodness.
It was crazy all over the place. There was the fat man touchdown.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the Chiefs losing. The Eagles share the best record in the NFL right now. There are 2-5-1 teams, and it's the Chiefs and Eagles, and then, you know, give the Chiefs a slight edge because they beat the Eagles. They're the one loss, but still, man.
So that's where we're going to start right here. We're going to go with the power rankings. We're going to start with number one. Seeing as the Chiefs beat the Eagles, they struggled against the Steelers. Steelers knocked them out of the playoffs last year, kind of had their game plan going. They fed Bell. Antonio had a big game. The Chiefs really struggled up front. I know they're kind of beat up on the offensive line, but on both sides of the ball, the Steelers really controlled things and had their way with the Chiefs. Do you still have the Chiefs as the, or not asking still because we haven't done this before,
right,
but do you have the Chiefs at the number one spot?
Yeah, Chiefs are number one. If not only because the Steelers have given the Chiefs fits for years, and this was a very desperate Steelers team that I think felt the heat of losing to Jacksonville. And, you know, Mike Tomlin's Steelers have always kind of played to competition, poorly for poor teams and played well for good teams. And so it didn't surprise me that they were able to, you know, trade punches with the Chiefs. Obviously, the first half ineptness was shocking a little bit from Kansas City. Did not expect that at all. And, you know, Steelers weren't doing much craziness. They were getting pressure with four and playing zone and telling Alex Smith to beat him with the arm, and, you know, wasn't able to. And then you bottled up Kareem Hunt pretty well. It was, you know, Eagles held the Chiefs to 6 first half points, was it? Very similar sort of game plan. So that blueprint is out there for facing Kansas City, but you gotta have the personnel, the front four personnel to pull it off. Regardless, Chiefs still have to be number one for me. More experienced team, you know, like I said, Steelers have always given them problems, but yeah, it's gotta be closer now that they've lost.
Yeah, and I know it's just that we might have some recency bias going on with some of the listeners thinking, well, they just lost. How can they be number one? Well, every team in the NFL has at least one loss, so there's that.
Right.
Every team's going to have a bad game throughout there, and it was still a close game that they could have won at the end. They just didn't get the breaks.
Right.
That Antonio Brown catch is still freaking crazy. Okay, so I'll have the Chiefs at number one as well. Number two, Ben, who are you going with?
Oh, I'll put it to you this way. You can't convince me it's Green Bay now that Rodgers is injured and they lost to Minnesota. You can't convince me it's Atlanta, who's lost to the Bills and has lost to the Dolphins. Bills at home. Dolphins, they were at home as well, right? I'm pretty sure they were. Either way, they should have beaten the Bills at home, and they should have beaten the Dolphins anywhere on the moon. It doesn't matter. So they've now lost two games they shouldn't have lost. I'm not putting the Patriots above the Eagles. Patriots who have lost two games, including to Carolina, who the Eagles beat. Patriots who went down 2 scores to the Jets. I'm not putting Denver above Philadelphia, not yet. I mean, that's a 4-1 team, but they can only win at home, and they do not have the offensive firepower that Philadelphia does. And then I think those defenses are, once you get healthy in the secondary, closer than a lot of people would like to admit. So, I mean, I would want to put Philadelphia second anyway, but I think you don't have any cases anymore. I think this is, right now, it's a 2-horse race for 1 and 2.
You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on this week, whether it's Steelers against Patriots or Bears against the Lions. Well, let me tell you this. Where you're betting at is just as important as who you're betting on, and that's why I always tell people to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been in this business for years, and their rep is rock solid. They do 100% cash bonuses, so off the bat, you're making money for doing nothing, and they have the fastest payout. Seriously, it's just 2 business days. Lay down some cash and win big today. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to my bookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit with up to 100% bonus. Use promo code LOEagles, that's LOEagles, to activate your offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Yeah, and speaking of which, because you brought up the Patriots, did you see the Austin Seferian Jenkins double fumble touchback?
Yes, and it was absolutely a touchback. It was a touchback. It 100% was. I do not understand the controversy about that at all.
You don't think he recovered it after he fumbled it?
I think that he fumbled it, and you cannot... So you can clearly confirm fumble on replay, and you cannot confirm that he recovered that fumble before he crossed the plane and before he was out of bounds. And so, well, here's the thing. You can't keep the call on the field because there's clearly a fumble. Right? And so now you have to prove on video that he recovered the ball before he was out of bounds in order to say it's still a touchdown. And you, in my opinion, you can't prove that. When you see conclusive evidence that he's got it covered, he's out of bounds. I think it was called
the touchdown on the field, wasn't it?
Right, but I don't think it was so called.
But you have to conclusively show that he was out of bounds. So the onus goes the other way.
That's the difficult thing. Is like, was it called on the field a fumble recovered for a touchdown, or was it called just a touchdown? Right. Yeah. I think that like changes the way you have to look at it a little bit. Right. But in my eyes, and I didn't watch it live, I just watched the replay. Like, you know, I watched the touchdown live and then I saw the original camera angle for the touchdown, and then I saw the different replay angles. And to me, you know, so he clearly doesn't possess the ball the entire way, which means it's a fumble, which means in my mind, I want to see proof that he covers it in the field of play. And when I see him regain possession of the ball, his leg's out of bounds, which means it should be a touchback.
Yeah.
I think. I'm not positive. I mean, because that rule's a little bit confusing, you know, but whatever.
Yeah, it is. Either way, man, the Patriots played pretty terribly that game, and they ended up getting away with one there. So, at least in the grand scheme of things, maybe not just on that call. So, okay, number two, you know, you're going to have to go with the Eagles. I think we agree on that. There's really no other argument. They beat a good, very good Carolina Panthers team on the road. The Chiefs has been their only struggle, and it was a one-score game, and they had a chance at the very end there as well. So, then as we kind of just look through the league here.
This is where it starts to get interesting. This is where it's thick to me.
I mean, I would probably go with number three, and they're playing tonight as we record. They're playing the Giants, but maybe I would go Denver here.
Yeah, that's what I would think. I would go Denver number three right now because, and for the reasons I listed, where you talk about them, the Eagles, very difficult to beat at home. Obviously, they have a stellar defense, but I think, you know, if you can score 21 against Denver, I don't think they're going to beat you. Right. I don't think they can put up enough points.
Yeah. Okay. So then that's settled there. Number four, Ben, what are you thinking?
Yeah, of course you defaulted to me. Yeah.
No, I'm thinking that's where either Carolina or Seattle comes in. And I think you give Carolina the edge there, and maybe you could talk about the Falcons too.
You have Seattle up that high. They're 3-2 and they have a bye this week. So they're going to end this week 3-2, and you have them in conversation for four.
I mean, there's a bunch of conversations you could have for four, but I would have Carolina at four.
Yeah. I think that I would probably put, I think New England would be my number four. And
gross.
Here's the thing. I look at New England, Carolina, and Atlanta, and I have no idea how to riddle out those three. But the quarterback I trust the most is in New England, and the head coach I trust the most is in New England. Yeah. And so that's going to give them an edge. That defense is ugly, though. Ugly.
Yeah, the defense has given up 159 points, which is tied for most.
That's more than 158. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's tied with the Indianapolis Colts. That's the level of defense they're playing over there in New England. They haven't fixed a lot of those issues over there yet. I expect them to get cleaned up, but man, not having a pass rush and then you're having all kinds of communication issues in the secondary, it's just not good. Okay, so number five, you said the Patriots number five?
No, I just said the Patriots is number four.
Who do you have number five then?
So five.
Don't give me any attitude, Ben. Jeez, man, it's a fluid situation. I'm trying to keep track of these things here.
All right, so five. So I said I've got the Patriots, Falcons, and the Panthers kind of all in a big lump. So I'll put Patriots four, probably Panthers five, because their loss was a higher quality loss. Mm-hmm. I think losing to the Eagles is bigger than losing to the Dolphins. That'll put the Falcons down at six. But right now, am I comfortable with the Falcons above the Seahawks and above the Rams and above the Steelers? Yeah, probably. So I'll put the Falcons at six.
Yeah, I would go Panthers at four, Falcons at five. And then, geez, man, it's tough. I mean, are the Steelers back, like, after this week? Because
four games are against opponents below 500, which means their next four games they'll play really poorly. So, you know, who knows? It depends on the opponent they're facing.
That's a fact, man. They are known for playing down to competition. I'm going to go ahead and throw the Steelers in there anyway, because people have been saying we haven't seen the best of them yet, and I agree with that. However, what we haven't seen is any kind of consistency. I think this game gives them a nice confidence boost, gives that defense what they needed mentally, gives Big Ben what he needed mentally, even though he had a mistake early on. Mm-hmm. I think this is maybe the turning around point for a talented football team with a lot of weapons. So I think they can be dangerous, but like you said, man, when they play poor teams, they tend to play poorly. So we'll see what happens with that as we move along.
So you right now, I have Patriots at four. You have not put the Patriots on the rankings yet. So are they going to make your top eight? And like, what has you most concerned about them is my question.
They can't stop anything. They're giving up the most yards per play in the freaking league. And like, it seems like, okay, can you depend on Gronk being healthy all year? It looked like Hogan was about to come out of the game. Amendola has an injury history. And I don't want to ever say that I would never bet against the Patriots. Let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. But the way I see things right now, until that defense becomes anything more than just Swiss cheese with gigantic holes in it, I can't really say that they would be top six for me. I'll put them at 7. And actually, no, I'll put them at 8. I'm going to put them behind. Buffalo's been playing better than them.
You're putting Buffalo? Oh,
no, wow. No, I'm not. I'm okay. Just saying they've been playing better than them. I don't trust them long term at all. Maybe Seattle I would put in front of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll put Seattle in front of him at 7, then I would put New England at 8. So who's your 7 and 8? And do you disagree with my 7 and 8?
See, it's tricky for me because I so badly want to work the Rams into this conversation because the Rams feel better than they are. The biggest issue was the almost win at Seattle, because it's very difficult to put them above Seattle at that point, right?
Right.
But I think the Rams are a top 10 team in power rankings as far as if I look at teams.
You know what?
What's that?
Yeah. No, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking that you're right and I'm wrong when it comes to who's playing better in that division. Seattle has all types of issues and the Rams only have like a couple things they really need to clean up. So
right.
No, but continue on with the Rams talk. I like where
because it's a perfect point, because when I think of playing Seattle, I think of, okay, you know, if I can force Wilson to try to take over this entire game by stymieing the rushing attack and then making him dance around while I'm, you know, covering with 8 in the back end, getting pressure with 3, I can beat him. If I look at the Rams, I say to myself, okay, I have to hang 30 on them in order to beat them, because I know that that offense is going to consistently produce high numbers, right? I know with McVay and with Gurley, and they've got some decent pieces on the offensive line that they've kind of revamped this year. I know that they'll consistently, on at least one half of the ball, play better football than I think you can get from either half of Seattle. But with that being said, so 7 and 8, I will probably go Steelers will probably, yeah, make it up to my 7. And then, you know, so you've got Seattle sitting around at 8. You have the Rams sitting around at 8. You have maybe Dallas, not really, maybe sitting around that area. Maybe Washington, but not really. I mean, folks want Jacksonville to be a real thing, but I don't think that they are. So I'll go Rams. I'll go Seattle at 7, Rams at 8, and that's a very, very close margin.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.
Yeah, I agree. And they're two totally different teams too. Like Seattle knows what they are, right? Mm-hmm. They're not going to blow you away on offense. They know that their offensive line is trash too, but they can stick around in like 12 to 9 games, and they know how to win those, and they have a history of winning those. You know what I mean? The Rams, on the other hand, can't really stop a whole lot and have to put up all those points like you pointed to. So I mean, they're in the conversation. If they can be more consistent, get a little bit better production out of their defense, then I don't see why they wouldn't be in the conversation for at least the top 10. So. Mm-hmm. Any other crazy things that you saw from these 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock games? Because dude, there was a point when the 4 o'clock game started, the Rams had a kick return for a touchdown, and then Fournette had a 75-yard touchdown. But things were so bonkers in the 1 p.m. games, you didn't see them until like 10 minutes after, because they had to show like all the important stuff. And combined with the college football weekend, where you had how many top 10 teams lose? Insane weekend.
No, absolutely absurd. Biggest thing for me is Eagles need this long week to get healthy. You know, obviously a big primetime Monday night game against a division opponent, Washington, that can play very good football. You know, they're up and down, but they can. It's almost a little bit frustrating, though, that the Eagles have this long week, because right now, who's hotter than Philadelphia?
Yeah.
You know, I these are two very big statement games as far as stepping on the Cardinals' throats, just destroying Arizona, and then going into Carolina on a short week and getting a win. You know, you almost... Like, I'm sure there are a couple teams, you know, maybe like the Saints and, I don't know, Rams kind of lost their momentum. But there are a couple teams that are hot right now, but the Eagles are among the hottest teams in the NFL as far as the momentum they've got building. They're on a 4-game win streak. And of those hot teams, I think they're just the most talented, period. They are the team to beat in the NFC right now. They are the standard up there. And so I'm happy about the long weekend, but kind of watching the way that all this breaks down, you almost wish the Eagles had more immediate games so they could kind of keep this train rolling. You know, you worry they'll come into Washington a little bit settle down when you kind of want them to keep building on this. You know, of course, they'll get hype. I'm sure they'll be fine, but still. Eagles team to beat in the NFC, man.
After having the Sunday and then Thursday turnaround, I'm okay with having the longer week there without it being a bye. Right. It kind of allows you, because you don't really get to game plan a whole lot for those Thursday games, so you're almost kind of running the same stuff that you would run on the Sunday game as well. This gives us an opportunity to have things on tape, self-scout, and then kind of flip the script on things with Washington coming into it with less days to prep. Yeah. So, I mean, there's that positive. Also, we don't have that early bye week like we did last year, so that's totally fine with me. We have a chance to get healthy and get you know, Fletcher Cox 100%, things of that
right.
nature.
And so, and no, I absolutely agree. And what you've got going on now is you've got three home games in a row. Two before the bye, and then the bye, and then one more. The two before the bye are the Redskins on Monday night, and then the 49ers on Sunday. Two games Philadelphia should win, period. And being at home, I think, will help getting, you know, that excitement, getting that belief back after that long week. And then you have the bye week to prepare for what is, in my opinion, the biggest game left on the schedule, which is the Broncos in Philadelphia.
Right.
And like I've been saying, you know, Broncos are top three, top four team in the NFL, but they are very much a home team and they don't travel well. And so you've got, you know, a three-game home stretch over 4 weeks, so plenty of time to get healthy. You can be fully charged, all of your corners back, coming in at, what is it, 7-1 against the Broncos in a game that'll probably be between like 7-1 and a 6-2 team in Philadelphia. You win that, you're 8-1. You've got three divisional games left. You've already swept the Redskins. Giants are out of the picture. However much the Cowboys might be, you know, on a run without Ezekiel Elliott, who knows? But really, after that Broncos game, you could be sitting comfortably saying, all right, the Eagles have this division, right? So, the rest is good, and the home stand is what's really good.
Enough about this weekend of football. We'll be diving more into it as the week goes along. We have another segment for you. We're going to do Pick a Prospect. I want to let you guys know that we've got Eric Eager from PFF coming on the show tomorrow with us. So get excited for that. So let's get into Pick a Prospect, and we will talk about some guys that, if you haven't heard this segment before, we're going to talk about some college prospects coming into the next NFL draft that could fit the Eagles. So we're going to view all of this through an Eagles lens. I know, Ben, both of us have wide receivers. Who is your guy?
Some good wide receivers. Yeah, Philadelphia could be in more of a need at wide receiver than we'd like for them to be coming into the 2018 draft. Simply, and we've talked about this a little bit before when you previewed Simi Cobbs. You know, you've got Jeffrey who might be gone next year. You've got Torrey Smith who might be gone next year. So looking at guys who could really fit in this offense, I'm going to Hunter Renfrow, who, if y'all watched the college championship last year, y'all know Hunter Renfrow.
Clutch.
Because, yeah, he made that final catch there in that corner of the end zone to beat Bama, make Clemson the national champion. Incredible play. And it kind of details a lot of Renfrow's strengths in the sense that he is an excellent route runner. He's very nuanced. He's very disciplined. He understands how to win defensive leverage, and he's snappy out of his breaks. He's got incredibly strong hands. The game I most recently watched for Clemson was where they lost to Syracuse on Friday night, number two team in the nation. And Renfrow made a catch diving to the ground where he first got his mitts on the ball about 8 inches above the floor, I'd say, and that thing did not touch the ground. You know, full extension, incredibly strong hands, incredibly short-handed, so you're not worrying about drops there. He'll probably fall into the conversation of, oh, he's just a slot guy because he's not necessarily big or have a huge catch radius or he can burn you over the top. And I don't want to drop this comparison because it'll turn some people off, but watching his tape reminds me a lot of Cooper Kupp's tape, just without the high volume. But Cooper Kupp is an incredibly valuable offensive piece, and you've already seen that with his time in Los Angeles, in the sense that those areas of the field that Wentz likes to work, the short and the intermediate, where he likes to throw crossers a ton, he does well working with receivers who find space in zone because he can really put the ball on them with some heat and fit it in tight windows. That's money for Renfrow. That's exactly where he thrives. And so he's a guy you could get in to be a very, very high volume target, get a lot of catches, help move the sticks. I think his presence would help Zach Ertz develop more of a downfield presence, kind of adding to the depth of Ertz's game. So Hunter Renfrow, he'll be a cheap guy too. You can get him, you know, probably day three. I like Hunter Renfrow a lot as a prospect.
Yeah, considering my love for Ryan Switzer last year, I would love to have somebody like Hunter Renfrow on the team. He's been absolutely clutch every time I've watched him. I'm going to go with a little bit different of a player that probably will play in the slot as well, but has a different skill set. I'm going to go with a guy who over the last two games has 25 catches, 314 yards, and six freaking touchdowns. This guy is a baller, and he might fly up some draft boards to where we might have to get him with that first round pick. Look, Anthony Miller out of Memphis is lighting my world on fire. This guy's got short area quickness, very, very crisp route runner. When he's at the break point on a post, or you get that little nod to the outside, he's setting people up. He has been uncoverable in some of these games. And forget those last two games I told you about. Earlier in the season against UCLA, higher competition. Well, you know, UCLA isn't the greatest team, but he's also playing for Memphis. 9 catches, 185 yards, and 2 touchdowns. This guy has vision and the creativity after the catch that I think the Eagles are lacking. We don't really have that yak guy. You know what I mean? And I think that's what Anthony Miller brings to the table. Have you seen Anthony Miller yet?
Oh, absolutely. No. I flipped on his UConn game and I was just pissed. You ever watch a player and he's doing so well, you're just angry? You're like, what is this nonsense? Oh, man. Miller had me pissed.
You know when you go to like Draft Breakdown and you go to click on a player for a game and sometimes it's like 2 minutes and 30 seconds for a wide receiver because they had like 4 catches or something like that. His was like 8 to 9 minutes long, and I'm like, holy crap, what is this? Like, was it not edited tightly? He had 15 catches for 224 yards and 4 touchdowns. It was unbelievable performance, and he had that one-handed catch too. He showed real sticky hands in that game as well. He just took over that game, so that is a guy I would be extremely excited for the Eagles to land, and hopefully he stays under the radar, because that's someone you get in a later round and you just think like a Carlos Henderson type guy that the Broncos got in the third round, something like that. But I think he's better than Henderson. I think he's looser than Henderson. I thought Henderson was a little bit stiff and didn't have quite the route tree that a guy like Anthony Miller has. So that's kind of where I'm looking at with Anthony Miller. Okay, Ben, have anything else for the gentle listeners?
No, I mean, what's up, gentle listeners? Keep it locked on here this week, right? No, it's a very fun week because we've got kind of some more open shows. We obviously have our crossover show on Wednesday with Locked On Redskins, Zach Hicks, great dude. We already talked about the Tuesday show with PFF, but then we've got that Thursday and Friday show wide open because we're not previewing the game until Monday morning. And so we've got some content coming your way that we haven't been able to drop during the year because the schedule's always tight. And so just make sure you're listening in, man. We've had some excellent weeks so far. Let's keep it moving.
And if you guys enjoy the abuse that I give Ben on a daily basis.
Oh, don't I ever.
Wait till you see how I treat our boy Zach Hicks. Me and him actually work together over at Breaking Football. He is my son, and he will be treated as such when he comes in on Wednesday to talk Redskins Eagles. So we're not going to take any guff from these swine on Locked On Eagles, and you got to keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.